Thank you all so much for coming. This is a really big deal for me. I've been working on this event for a while. So kind of want to start off and talk about what exactly do I mean by tools. So how many people have been to a hackathon before in general? Most of you, if not all. So a lot of hackathons I go to, they make something kind of basic, you know, in 48 hours. It's kind of what you have to do. And there's different themed hackathons for different ideas and different kinds of games. But oftentimes, whatever is made, maybe if it's a good idea, then, you know, the team will continue that. And I've seen companies formed after the tool jam, after that hackathon. But the hackathon itself doesn't actually produce anything of value. And then I saw going around Silicon Valley these things called civic tech hackathons. Who's heard of a civic tech hackathon? So the idea is doing something for social good, you know, hack for San Jose or whatever, make an app for this organization or this city, trying to do something good where it's something actually productive and useful by the end of the weekend. I thought, well, why don't we do that with game developers and actually make something productive and useful at the end of a weekend to help other game developers? Because everyone repeats that same, like, 24 to 48 hours of work to make something, whatever it is, right? Like, there's so much repeated work done in game development. And when you think about game development now, then nowadays, you think about tools like Unity or Visual Studio. Like, you already are using this middle layer from, like, coding into base, like, DirectX. Like, who does that anymore, right? Like, everyone uses some kind of tool to develop their game. And, you know, I found this chart randomly on the internet, right? And the whole notion of, like, okay, I can go make this game, but if I take a little bit extra effort, I can make this awesome tool or this script. It's going to save me so much time in the long run. But when it comes to our own development, this is, you know, kind of theory. But when it comes to reality, XKCD did this awesome strip where, yeah, you know, I'll do all this work ahead of time, and then it'll be easy street. Okay, actually, no, writing a tool is maybe a little bit harder than it seems, and you got to debug it, and you have to, you know, update it. And by the time it comes for your game, it's probably quicker to just, you know, go through it once and do it that one specific way and not generalize it. But the problem is that chart only makes sense when you're talking about one developer, one situation. And if you think about, okay, what if I extract this out of what I'm going to do and what every other developer is probably doing in their pipeline, if I take this weekend, this 48 hours right now, and code something, get that started for a tool to help them, and even better, open source it so that afterwards someone can continue using it, someone can fork it and continue developing, you guys might create a tool here that might end up being the next industry standard thing, the next tool that everyone uses, everyone must have in their projects, just by trying to solve a problem that you might have in your own development right now. So why is Microsoft doing this first off? Well, you know, Microsoft has this awesome Reactor space, open community space. Who's been to the Reactor before? I think a good amount of you people. But for those who haven't, this is our awesome event space. We host events out of here at least like 4 days a week, I think, in office hours. And the idea is that we as Microsoft, we want to facilitate people to come in and make cool, new, and interesting things. But also, you're talking about development tools in general. That's been Microsoft's theme for a long time, man. Developers, 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 developers. Microsoft's made its money by being that in-between tool to make development easy and accessible, right? When you're talking about Visual Studio, you're talking about our Azure Cloud, or you're just talking about, you know, the platforms in general. So, I totally forgot to introduce myself, by the way. If you don't know me already, I'm Tobiah. I work for Microsoft. But now let me introduce Chase from Playcrafting, the other side of this equation.
How are you guys? Whoa, this is loud. So Playcrafting, how many of you guys have heard of Playcrafting before? No. Okay, one. So this is cool. So Playcrafting is a company that started in New York. We originally started out as a meetup, and it was just kind of a gathering for game developers to meet together, share ideas, network. And what happened from there is it kind of just kept snowballing and grew. And so what we are now is we are a fully-fledged company that focuses on empowering the gaming community, and that's through networking, education, and collaboration. So what we do is we do events for gamers, which is what we're pretty much the most known for, is our events that we hold. But we also do education. So we teach development, and we also teach developers how to become more successful business people in general. We just launched here in San Francisco last November, so it's still pretty new. Between New York and Boston, we have a community of about 15,000 developers. And so we just launched here, and then we're actually planning on launching in Seattle and then also Los Angeles sometime in the next 6 months. So if you guys are, since you're going to be around this weekend, we're actually having our flagship event. Every quarter we do an expo, and that's where we bring in like 75 to 100 local developers, and they get a chance to come in to the Reactor, and they show off their game that they're working on, whether it's finished, unfinished, and we bring in about 400 people, and that gives them a chance to just come through, play games, give feedback to the developers if they're, you know, trying to receive that. And it just, it's a cool chance for everybody to show off their game, get exposure, and all that good stuff. So we're actually doing that tomorrow evening. We're taking a break around 7 p.m., and we're going to bring in the games, and we're going to have people, we're going to have more food, pizza, and you guys will get a chance to do that. So if any of you guys, does anybody, like, have a game? Is anybody working on a game right now? Yes, no? You are? Okay. So if you want to talk to me after, we still have some slots available if you wanted to bring in your game tomorrow, if you aren't already signed up. But we can talk a little bit further about that, and then we're actually launching our education portion of the company, which is going to take place next month. So we have an Intro to Unity class coming up in early June, and then hopefully an Intro to VR class in mid-June, and then next September, we're actually launching a full-fledged 8-week Unity course. So if anybody would be interested in that too. So so we're interested in this just because we have a really great partnership with Microsoft. We actually hold most of our events in the cities we're located in Microsoft space. We did a really cool global game jam with them back in January, and that was in the Microsoft office in New York City. So pretty much, you know, we're always looking to help build a community, help, you know, have a space for developers to flourish and just kind of share ideas and just build the community from there on up. So yeah. We're really excited to be a part of it this weekend.
All right, who's ready to actually make some stuff, make some tools? Oh, come on, you can do like better than that. I heard, come on, give me a woo, come on. Yeah, we gotta have some energy here. You aren't gonna be able to last the whole weekend if that's like the energy of the room. All right, so let's go over the rules of Tool Jam. There's three simple rules. One, follow the code of conduct. I know this is an eye chart you can go check out on Playcrafting site, but I can easily summarize this for you. Don't be an asshole. And if you have any problems or questions, come talk to myself, Chase, Kat in the dinosaur outfit, or even Kenny back there over by the computer. We will help. We'll try to solve it as soon as we can, whatever it might be. So, main rule of the project, or main rule of the jam, whatever you make needs to be open source. So, if you have work that you've done ahead of time, you have a work you've been building on, you're welcome to bring it in. You don't necessarily have to start from scratch. You can even bring in outside people's work, as long as you have the rights to it, that you can include it as part of your open source project MIT license. So, you can't, you know, use someone else's paid work, even if you've paid for it, because then you know, it's going to have to be further licensed, if that makes any sense. If you have any questions on this, you can ask me afterwards. We're going to submit to GitHub, so rather than using any one of those hackathon sites, I thought, you know, might as well make the submission process part of getting it out there into the world. So we're going to make sure everyone here at the end of every team, every project, has their own GitHub repo. We have a standardized README file. I have it on my GitHub right now. You can easily pull that, but you don't need to worry about that, you know, tonight. We'll facilitate that later on. And then as for what the project is itself, it must benefit game developers. Now, I'm keeping it really, really vague because I want to see what kind of cool, interesting things you come up with. Is it a software development kit for something, some project? Is it a utility that helps out with game development? Is it a plugin for an existing tool, plugin for Visual Studio, plugin for Unity? Is it really well-documented sample code that someone can go in and really understand the basics of how to do whatever? Or, you know, something else. I want to see what kind of interesting things that people come up with, you know, pulling out this challenge of making a tool. Who would consider they've made a game development tool before this hackathon? I'm kind of curious. Like one person. That's great. That's exactly why I want to do this hackathon, because we need to be making tools and helping each other out. Now, things I want to discourage is sample code. That is to say, I'm just going to make like an endless runner like I would normally do at a hackathon and then call it sample code. Now, I say discourage because I'm not going to say don't do that. You know, if that's what you want to do, that's what your skill level's at, that's what the only thing you can come up with, sure, go ahead. But I really want to push you to make something interesting. Get out of your comfort zone. Try to make a utility or a tool or an SDK to something that you might not actually take the time and sit down and develop outside of this hackathon space, whereas you might develop a quick game project, a prototype, that sample code type project otherwise. So I want to encourage you to get out of your comfort zone. But I'm not going to say you're disqualified for it. You can totally, totally do it as long as you make a justification that it helps game developers. All right, let's talk a little bit about the schedule for this weekend. Obviously, we're doing the keynote right now. After that, we'll do team assignments. If you don't already have a team, and not assignments so much as matchmaking and getting everyone a team and a project. And then we'll be hacking until 2 a.m. tonight, which then you don't have to stop hacking, but you can't hack here. We'll close down the space, open it back up at 8 a.m. tomorrow. 9 a.m. tomorrow, we have breakfast, lunch at noon. And then, as Chase said, we're going to have an awesome expo here. So you guys get to take a couple hour break from hacking, have some fun, play some games. And depending on where you're at that point, maybe we can set up a table and show off some of the tools that you made. So there's going to be a lot of game developers here. You might want to show off the awesome, work in progress mid-hack. If you want to just keep on hacking through that time, you're like, I don't care about this expo at all, we should still have some extra space over to the side. It might be a little loud, but you can still probably hack in the corner or maybe one of the side rooms. So we'll facilitate that. But otherwise, we're going to be clearing out this middle area. So if you have any setups that are hard to move, doesn't look like anyone brought like a desktop setup, but if you did, probably encourage you to set up over on this side, because this middle area right over here will clear out for the expo, probably starting around 6 p.m. tomorrow. Expo's 7 to 10, and then after 10, it's back to hacking until 2 a.m., which then you got to go home. Sunday, same thing at 8 a.m., 9 a.m., noon, but we're going to stop all hacking at 3 p.m. All work stops. Submit to GitHub, make sure everything's finalized and standard, has the right README, what's all linked on the central page. And then we'll have the ending keynote, and every team will come up here and present on their project and explain what it does. Not just to this group, but we're also going to record it so that we can include the video on the GitHub repo showing you, the developer, explain what your thought process was, what you accomplished, what you'd like to see done with it in the future. Because even if you are done with it completely after the weekend, maybe someone will stumble across it and want to continue developing it. So, you have a little explanation of what your process was in making it and what you were intending it to be, even if it isn't fully polished and finished. All right. With that, any questions so far? I know I went over a lot. All right. Now I want to actually take a moment and talk about what kind of tools you can make. I was being really vague before. I don't know how many of you who came in with an idea ahead of time of something that they want to make. All right, like none of you. Great. So this is great. We have a couple hours tonight. Let's figure it out. What kind of tool should you make? I love XKCD. They made a really awesome chart here. The idea, is you want to do something that solves some type of problem, some type of point where a developer is going to have a hangup, is adding extra time, or it could even not be a developer's problem, but maybe something that you have when doing something that isn't related to development, or when someone who isn't a developer is trying to do something that relates to a game development project, but they don't necessarily have the same skill set and don't really understand how to use the more complicated tools, something that simplifies that process for them. And so rather than tell you, here's a list of 10 ideas, you do one of them, I kind of wanted to highlight some past tool ideas that I think are within the scope of could be done at a hackathon like this to kind of inspire you as to something that you can create. So first off, who's heard of SoundFXR or SFXR, or it might be heard the later version BFXR, or sorry, BFER, whatever it is. It's this awesome little app that you can just adjust these random sliders, and if you're not an audio person like I'm not, you don't even know what all of them mean, but just by clicking around, you can make these really awesome bleeps and bloops and 8-bit sounds, and there's probably thousands of indie games right now that have their entire sound library based on a generator like this, or this particular generator. And this was a London Dare Game Jam project. This person just took 48 hours and hacked out this little app that made random sounds when you just bleeps and bloops and export them out as waves, and suddenly thousands of game developers could generate different sounds for their games. It's really not that hard of a project to do, even if you're not exactly an audio person, because it's, you know, just about figuring out some sound generation. Of course, you can add extensions. If you're a user of Visual Studio, there's this huge extensible library there, and there's all sorts of things that you can do within that, about maybe extracting out streams to make localization easier, or something that speeds up development when using a tool like Unity with Visual Studio, or just make a Unity plugin in general. If you go to the Asset Store, you can see all sorts of different awesome SDKs and sample code and awesome plugins that you can find on there that, you know, you might be inspired of, hey, I wish there was one like this, but slightly different. Who's heard of DoPressKit? Oh, wow, like only one of you. So this company called Vlambeer, they were wanting to market their game, and they thought, well, we need a press kit, and they wanted to make one instead of just having to manually make a press kit and put it up on their site, because they made it, a few different games. They decided to make this simple little script that you just fill out this really easy to do form, and you get this very standardized, very clean press kit that you can throw up on your site. And this really, really changed the indie industry. And maybe that's a little bit of exaggeration, but not so much, because every indie I know should have a Do press kit on their site, and does. It's this really, really simple, easy to read press kit. It's great if people want to write about your game. They can find all the information and the facts that they need. It helps you as a developer remember, oh yeah, I need to put like history about the company, I need to put description, I need to put these screenshots. If I want to write about the game, I know immediately once I go to press kit, I'm comfortable, finding different parts, I'm comfortable grabbing a screenshot, and it makes it more likely that people are going to cover and talk about your game. Even more importantly, because it's a standardized format, now there's bots going around and looking at standardized press kit formats, and there's tools out there that look at other people's press kits from Do Press Kit and pulling that information in. So even if you have your own custom press kit, you still want to make a dual press kit on your website just to have that standardized format. And this is a simple little web page, a PHP script that generates this press kit. And as I said, I feel like it kind of changed the indie industry once it started going around. And it's totally within scope of this hackathon to do. It also highlights another point, that this isn't a tool that helped them make the game, but it helped them market the game. You know, Rami was not a marketer. He's a programmer. And so he approached a marketing problem with a programming solution. And another story that I want to tell, I have a friend who was a designer at, we'll say, a major studio. And he was talking with me and some other friends who were all programmers, and he was not a programmer. And we were asking him about his job, and he described that for 4 hours a day, he was editing images in Photoshop in this very repetitive task, basically adding watermarks. And by the end of that afternoon, we were hanging out, we had a Photoshop script for him that was taking something that he was spending 4 hours a day doing, and it turned into 5 minutes. And he didn't know. His boss wasn't a programmer, didn't know that you could just do a script like that. And it was a big enough company that the technical people didn't talk to those people in some way, and they didn't realize that there was a better way to do it. They just thought that's, you know, you just had to put man hours into the problem. So even if you're thinking about, well, what am I going to make? Like, think about how many people out there spend so much time doing something basic, like setting up rulers in a Photoshop doc, or just, you know, exporting out different image sizes for, you know, different platforms. There's a lot of little utilities or scripts that you can make that even if your time right now, if you were just doing it, okay, it takes me 15 minutes to export this out, I'll just do that. But if you put this weekend into that effort and turn someone's 20-minute effort into a 2-minute effort, and you spread it across thousands of people, you're going to be saving hundreds of hours of work for people out there in the world. Lastly, I also want to talk a little bit about accessibility. Who's heard of Able Gamers before? Again, not that many of you. Able Gamers is an awesome charity that focuses on people with all sorts of different disabilities who are gamers and want to play games. And they deal with people specifically making custom controllers, talking to them about games, but also talking to the developers and making their games more inclusive. Because a lot of people don't think about inclusivity when they're designing their games. In fact, most of them think about it as this, like, oh, I'll get the game working first and then I'll think about it, which is a really backwards way to do it, because it ends up costing way more money to do first off, and you end up making these assumptions early on in the design that just blocks the game out for people later on. If you just thought about, well, what if a player doesn't have this ability, or if you need to think about, you know, different difficulty levels as you're designing the game, or you think about, hey, there's going to be text, how am I going to localize that later or be able to pull that into a closed captioning system? And thinking about that ahead of time in a game can save you so much effort later on, but also make your game way, way more accessible, not just to people with disabilities. Block this out. Not just with people with disabilities, but every gamer at some point is disabled. It's in a temporary fashion. So, for instance, someone who is playing Xbox might be deaf and need to be able to have closed captioning, but they also just might be wanting to play with the sound off so they don't wake up their baby. And both of those scenarios, if you combine those people together, it's actually a large amount of people want to be able to play games with the option of the sound off. So if you think about, hey, do I require that you hear this sound cue in order to know this moment in the game? Or could I make a closed captioning system that detects, oh wait, there's a loud noise over there, can I visually represent that in some way? You know, a flash on the screen, a little subtitle at the bottom. And so how this relates to tools is that you could make a tool ahead of time that helps make a game more inclusive. There's this awesome website, includification.com, that Able Gamer does, has a huge list of guides of things that you can do to make your game more accessible. And I would encourage you, if you're interested in this, to look at that website and come up with tools and ways that you can do some of the work ahead of time and think about, as I said, maybe a closed captioning system, maybe a way to be able to take text and localize it and pull it out so that, you know, someone can translate to other languages. That's also kind of an accessibility thing and ties into a closed captioning system. Or maybe even just a template or sample code for an awesome menu for being able to remap your controls. You know, having remappable keys can help a lot. And so to talk a little bit about accessibility, I wanted to bring Bryce Johnson, this guy from the Xbox design team, down, because I've talked to him a couple times about these ideas, and he wanted to come and speak to you about, you know, encouraging you to make tools for accessibility as one of the many options that you could do. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it. He's actually in Seattle. But I did have my coworker Jeremy record a quick video with him. So if you indulge me for a little bit, I wanted to just play this quick 6-minute video of him talking about accessibility as it relates to game development to maybe help encourage you to come up with ideas to maybe help make games more accessible. Wait, I gotta pull up.
And I'm going to be facilitating a conversation with Bryce Johnson. Hey everybody, welcome to Tool Jam. I'm your host, Jeremy Foster, and I'm going to be facilitating a conversation with Bryce Johnson all about inclusive design. So there's a lot of information in Bryce's head. We're going to get it into your heads, so hang tight. Bryce, how you doing?
I'm good.
Awesome. Can you tell the audience about yourself, who you are, what you do?
Yeah, I'm Bryce, and I'm a designer at Xbox, and I focus on applying Microsoft's inclusive design practice to gaming.
Great. All right. So Microsoft's inclusive design practice, what is that?
Well, so when we think about inclusive design, let me sort of take a step back. And I think when people normally think about people with disabilities, they think about things like personal health conditions, like I happen to have cerebral palsy. But it's important to remember that cerebral palsy is not a disability, it's a health condition. And to get that kind of idea across, the idea is that in 2014, the World Health Organization changed its definition of disability from a personal health condition to a mismatch of interactions. So what that sort of means is that it isn't about the health condition, it's about the environment that people come across. So to give you a more kind of concrete example, the wheelchair doesn't make the building inaccessible, the stairs do.
Oh, interesting.
So what that means for us as like creators and designers is that it's important for us to realize that disability is actually designed, that in the things that if we do not intentionally include people of all abilities, we are actually creating disability.
Interesting. Okay, so it's a mismatch of the person and the experience that they're trying to have. How does this apply to the world of gaming?
Well, I think when we traditionally think about accessibility, we think about removing barriers. And the trick is with gaming is that obviously gaming is about the barriers and the challenges are part of the fun. So we don't really want to necessarily eliminate barriers, but we want to fine-tune barriers to people's abilities. We want to make sure that people can play. If a barrier is insurmountable, that's not fun, that's just frustrating.
Yeah, right. Can you give us an example of that?
Well, I think some basic examples that are very traditional in the gaming industry are things like not using red and green colors to differentiate elements. So people who are colorblind can't necessarily see things. Or if you have game dialogue that does not have subtitles and it's conveying information, you're basically limiting people who are hard of hearing from being able to access that content.
Okay, so for instance, if I've got some sort of a top-down game and I've got little soldiers or minions or something and they're running around and I decide as a game, as a developer, hey, this looks good, I'm gonna have this team be red and I'll just kind of build that into the code and this one will be green, I've essentially carved out a section of my potential audience and I've really done a disservice to myself as the developer by reducing my audience, and I've also done a disservice to them because they're not really going to be able to engage in the game because they can't differentiate well enough between green and red.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, the classic example of this is when King first came out with Candy Crush, you know, there was a lot of color, there was a lot of using only color to differentiate elements.
Oh, I see.
And they fixed that, and now their game is much more accessible to people.
Okay, now you said only color, so that maybe alludes to some strategies on using multiple ways of differentiating things to allow people with, you know, maybe one person has color blindness, but another person has difficulty reading.
Right.
And so you include both of those, and now you've included both of those audiences. Is that the way we should think?
I mean, absolutely. I think it's just about thinking about multiple facets of how we display and present information, and to have something that'll catch someone's ability. So in the case of King, they added shape, as well as color.
Okay. Now, you were talking to me earlier about game mechanics and making game mechanics inclusive. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think a really good example of a game mechanic, which is very hard for people with limited dexterity, is a QuickTime event.
Okay.
So like in Tomb Raider, when you have to hit A at a certain point or X at a certain point.
Oh, yeah, I've done that.
So when you have limited dexterity, I'm going to give you like kind of an example. Imagine like if A was on your controller and X was on the floor and Y was on the ceiling you had to try to hit all those buttons. Now, it might seem like a silly kind of example, but for people with mobility impairments, that is actually kind of real. So the way that we can tackle a QuickTime event to make it more inclusive is we can make them smart. So maybe the first time you fail, it gets progressively easier by doing things like you can increase the time for the QuickTime event. You could reduce the configuration of buttons. Maybe it's just a single button that needs to be pressed. And maybe if you fail enough, they'll just let you skip the event.
It's interesting that you posed these disabilities, or what, you know, we've used the term disability, and you're defining them as barriers. Mm-hmm. And then you said that in the gaming world, this thing that is normally an unfortunate circumstance,
right,
this thing that we wish wasn't there and we're going to have to design around it, is part of the fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so if I'm making games, should I I'm strategically coming across, I mean, I'm designing barriers into my game anyway, right? I'm mm-hmm. trying to make people shoot at you, and I'm trying to make people run into you, and you're trying to avoid that. That's the whole point of the game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really just about being cognizant about people's abilities and kind of understanding that you're not the audience in a way, that yeah. you're more than that. There's actually a quote that I have that's really always inspired me. It's from Satoru Iwata from the GDC keynote mm-hmm. That he gave in 2005. I'm just going to read it. It says, I'm most concerned with what we think of as a gamer. As we spend more time and money chasing exactly the same players, who are we leaving behind? Are we creating games just for each other? Do you have friends and family members who do not play games? Well, why don't they? And I would ask you this. Have you challenged yourself to create a game that you might not play?
Oh, wow. That sounds hard.
Yeah, but I think it's something we all can kind of do, right? I think it's we can think about putting ourselves in someone else's position.
Yeah.
We can all get into situations that allow us to do that. And one of the things that we have in our practice is this idea of the persona spectrum, which is that people's abilities sometimes are permanent, they're temporary, or they're situational.
Okay.
So let me give you kind of an example of that. If a permanent condition would be like, I'm an amputee, I only have one arm. Mm-hmm. A temporary but sort of equivalent condition of that is that I happen to be in a sling. I've broken my arm, I can't use it.
Okay.
And then the situational version of that, the situational impairment, is I'm holding a baby. Obviously, if I'm holding a baby, that arm is being used.
Yeah.
So I'm one-handed.
Yeah. Oh, that hits home.
Yeah.
Great. Well, is there any other advice that you have to the people here at Tool Jam that are trying to make games and they're considering this aspect that maybe they weren't considering before? How do I make my game inclusive? How do I make it accessible? How do I bring that thought process into my development?
I would honestly, the IGDA puts out, or members of the IGDA, the International Game Developers Association, puts out a list of gaming accessibility guidelines.
Oh, good.
So if you search for gaming accessibility guidelines, there's some really great tips in there. I would love to see some tools come out of Tool Jam that help make it easier for developers to make their games more accessible.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Bryce. It's been great talking to you. I'm actually really encouraged to know that we have people like yourself that specialize not just in inclusive design or in gaming, but in the convergence of the two. That's really a great thing.
Yeah, so. Great. It's super awesome.
Have fun at Tool Jam.
Thanks.
See ya.
I know, it seems I've kind of gone off on a side tangent with this accessibility theme, but I would really, really like the idea of you guys making tools to make game development more accessible as a general statement. And if you think about it, all tools, all they're building is making it more accessible, because everyone can make any kind of game writing in assembly or going, you know, straight in DirectX, right? And what game development tools do as a concept is make game development more accessible to all. So there's making the game more accessible, but also making development itself more accessible. And there's this whole world of ideas that you can do along those lines if you're thinking in that mindset. All right, so that's kind of my inspirational talk part of it. Any questions at this point about the event in general, stuff, themes you want to throw out there? You guys ready to start hacking?